This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
In approaching the project, we wanted to expand the potential ways of interpreting the subject to include not only the subject of masturbation, but also other pleasures of the self. An expanded field of solitary pleasures represented by objects or visual experiences that were conducive or elusive to solitary experiences, or to echo Derrida's statement that, quote, sexual autoaffection, that is, autoaffection in general, neither begins nor ends with what one thinks can be circumscribed by the name of masturbation, end quote. We also want to provide a historical context, a theoretical framework, and in the process of expanding the notion of solitary pleasures, to consider the act of making and viewing art as a solitary pleasure in and of itself. Of course, perhaps here for tonight, there is a challenge in experiencing the work alone. And yet, alone in the imagination, in mental reflection, in the ways that we process what we see, aesthetic contemplation occurs, as well as often in the ritualistic act of representation. So both in our acts of looking and making, we find a pleasure that is solitary. Thus, we have allusions here to the visual pleasures of trompe l'oeil, as well as the solitary pleasure of artistic process, a facet to solitary pleasures rarely discussed in the discourse of academic art history. Indeed, the exhibition essay alludes to some of these permutations. I direct people's attention to the essay which is on the sliding partition, which is actually sliding as I speak, which is nice. Beyond the diversity of interpretations of the subject matter, the show features a diverse range of media, including video, painting, drawing, photography, sound, and sculpture, while featuring an array of historical reference material in the forms of quotes and images. So I encourage everyone to explore the exhibition and also to realize that this show is only provisional and speculative, not exhaustive or authoritative. For this evening, I want to briefly discuss a couple of additional theoretical speculations that have arisen from my excessive contemplation of the subject over the past year of my quote-unquote research. Consider them, if you must, supplements, perhaps dangerous, to the strains of thought discussed in the exhibition essay. Of course, this should not make them of any less importance than the ideas presented there, but rather that all of these beginning speculations will yield at some point a more developed and involved discussion, something requiring a great deal of space given the nature of the speculations. My first speculation concerns self-indulgent style and its reception in American letters. That is to say, while considering the associations made between onanism and literature articulated in the discourse on masturbation in the 19th century, I realized that there was a longer tradition that relegates masturbation to other forms of self-indulgence. In terms of our own cultural context, it could be suggested, grossly speaking, that a tradition of American pragmatism shuns the self-indulgent, excluding not only masturbation, but also what is perceived as intellectual masturbation. This is something that helps to explain some of the vitriol in the reaction to Jacques Derrida's work in this country, something that Marx comments on his work from conservative academics to even someone like Noam Chomsky. As a reader and writer on Derrida, I have often had to have recourse to a style that some would consider self-indulgent and, at times, rightly so, while also at times being called to defend the perceived self-indulgence of Derrida's style by more pragmatic-minded readers. But the resistance on the one hand to self-indulgent style, besides refracting a pragmatism that lurks at the core of a version of an ethos or what remains of it in this country, also reflects the lingering presence of modernist structures and strictures of thinking, another specter of modernity. A delineation of academic discourse is requiring an identifiable style versus a style that would be associated with literature or poetry, or more damning still, from an academic standpoint, creative writing. That is to say, a particular style is expected of the academy, and this has always been something that I find curious, being a teacher at an academy. Of course, it is an academy of art and simultaneously the art institution, the oldest art institution in America. Bad giving publicity for my own school. So who am I to speak on this subject? Yet it is important to note that in approaching such a topic as literary self-indulgence, I am not going to restrain myself from using restraint when the occasion is needed, such as now. So suffice it to say, first, speculation. The tensions between French thinking and thinking in the English language is one embroiled in an idea of self-restraint versus self-indulgence, as explored using Derrida as exemplar par excellence, but certainly not limited or limiting myself to his example. Indeed, in using Derrida's essay Economimesis as a bridge, I will approach not only reactions to mimetic and anti-mimetic art in the West since the Renaissance, but also the way these reactions relate to notions of sensual pleasure, of auto-affection, and that Kant discusses in relation to beauty, a free play and a pleasure that the self gives itself. I will also consider the emergence of spaces for solitary pleasure, from the private viewing rooms and cabinets of the Renaissance to 18th century Wunderkammers, 19th century dioramas, and to the virtual realms of today. Yet against this story of visual culture and aesthetics has to also be seen a narrative of economics as well, which leads me to my second speculation, an economic one. So two, an economic model contours attitudes towards masturbation in the modern era. A language concerning the economics of bodily fluids and viscera marks the modern self. In the case of masturbation, we see a language that views bodily fluids as a scarce and precious resource, not to be wasted in acts of self-indulgence or what was referred to as self-abuse. At the same time, the bodily fluids needed to be expelled before they go bad, according to the medical discourse of the time. The rise of such a rhetoric is both something new and something old. The language that speaks in terms of economics, and there are ample sources that can be cited in a Foucauldian manner, and indeed Foucault's own observations point to the element of economics involved in the anti-onanism movement of the 19th century. It could also be suggested that this economic language of scarcity evokes something of the emergent mercantilism of modern capitalism. To waste seed is to damage future crops, or so the rhetoric goes. At the same time, in this language of retention, there is also a tension with expenditure, of when it is necessary to expend and what is natural. Here I will lay a reading of the rhetoric of, I'm sorry, here I will read, back up. Here I will layer a reading of this rhetoric in relation to not only Derrida's Economimesis and his speculations on what the body expels, but also Georges Bataille's Accursed Share and his implementation of expenditure as a means to critique capitalism. And finally, to triangulate this relationship, consider Lyotard's Libidinal Economy, which is to say nothing of Deleuze for the moment. That there is a strong libidinal economy driven by solitary pleasures in our culture is difficult to argue against. And this is perhaps a third speculation or a supplement up to the supplement. That is to say, beyond these theoretical speculations that inform my own approach to the narrow subject of masturbation and the expanded field of solitary pleasures, I want to suggest that there are material conditions today, even in these times of economic uncertainty, to be compelled by the significance of the subject of this exhibition, provisional and speculative as it may be. To ground these speculations, we may turn to numbers to reflect upon shifts within the media that come to contour everyday experience. So, for instance, we can note a shift from a world of the radio to one of the television when in 1953, television revenue from advertising exceeds the advertising revenue from radio for the first time. Again, a solitary pleasure lurks in the background as cigarette advertising is largely what drives this growth. The shift from watching movies in a theater to watching them at home begins in 1980 with the introduction of the VCR, and by 1990, 50% of American homes have a VCR. The culture of the DVD sees an even more rapid ascent. Introduced in 1997, 50% of American consumers own a DVD player by the year 2000. By 1999, 55% of the film industry's revenue comes from the home video industry. 23% comes from other forms of media, including pay-per-view, cable, and broadcast television rights, and only 22% from actual box office revenue. Of course, the solitary pleasures of watching movies at home also entails the private viewing of pornography. And while the numbers concerning the revenue generated by pornography are often as augmented and exaggerated as some of the performers, it still accounts for a multi-billion-dollar industry, encompassing somewhere between $9 to $13 billion annually in America alone, let alone to talk about the greater numbers internationally. While not necessarily outstripping mainstream entertainment as sometimes is claimed, and not as obscene as the annual expenditure on warfare, it is still an impressive figure for an industry whose primary purpose can be satisfied through no financial cost, through no financial cost whatsoever, utilizing common household products to enhance the experience. So they make a lot out of nothing. That is to say, the economic growth in the world of pornography, while difficult to find hard numbers on, charts something of the larger growth in solitary pleasures within society during the recent past. And indeed, Wall Street self-indulgence could potentially be viewed as a form of economic masturbation. Of course, that is if we weren't all getting so screwed by it. Yes. Yet these economic speculations on self-indulgence, solitary pleasures, pragmatism, and masturbation are again to be found back in antiquity. While I alluded to the famous account of Diogenes masturbating in a public market in the exhibition essay, there is a second story concerning Diogenes that relates to this evening's subject matter. Galen, whose medical discourse on the body foretells the model of scarcity alluded to earlier, relates the following story. Quote, Diogenes, the Cynic philosopher, is known to have been the most self-controlled of all people in regard to every act which required abstinence and endurance. However, he indulged in sexual relations since he wanted to get rid of the inconvenience caused by the retention of sperm. But he did it not for the pleasure associated with this elimination. Once he made an arrangement with a courtesan, but as the story goes, when she came to him after some delay, he already had discharged the sperm by manual friction of his genitalia. After arrival, he sent her away with the words, "My hand was faster than you in celebrating the bridal night." It is evident that a chaste person does not indulge in sexual intercourse for pleasure, but with the intention to relieve this urge, as if this were not associated with pleasure. End of quote. Suffice it to say, in evoking Diogenes and Galen while noting the particularities of our culture, we can see even in passing the tensions and dilemma posed by both restrictive attitudes towards solitary pleasure and indulgent attitudes. Regardless of where one's own personal views may be, this exhibition offers a space to consider the multi-layered possibilities of the subject matter, that solitary pleasures do matter more than we say or can say or think, and that to begin to think the self authentically, a form of self-contemplation, necessitates some formative relation to a multiplicity of solitary pleasures, let alone masturbation. Smoking, drinking, eating, looking at art, making art, writing about art, breathing. All these simple pleasures are experienced in some context radically alone. Solitary pleasures contour the formation of the self, but in solitude and in our negotiations between self and other, as well as in the negotiations and language between me, myself, and I. And yet, lest it seem that I am being self-indulgent, I want to just welcome everyone and enjoy the exhibition and thank you all for indulging these brief speculations.